This is Wade Rathke. You're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World. Whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org and acornradio.org. A podcast will be available of this show on these websites and affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to John P. Clark, who is the director of La Terre Institute for Community and Ecology, a former professor at Loyola University in New Orleans, and a well-known philosopher, as you're going to hear more about in terms of the political bearings of anarchist communitarianism. I don't know if that's the right term, John, but welcome to Wade's World.
As good as any.
Well, let the community rise up and correct me. That'll be part of it.
It's perfect, actually.
La Terre is in Mississippi, in Kiln, Mississippi, not far from the Gulf Coast. I had the privilege of bringing a couple of interns with me and visiting just a weekend or two. But John, tell us, tell the listeners a little bit what La Terre is, and let's talk about what you try to do there.
Okay. Can I start the story a little earlier?
Because
I really
wanted
to say that I'm so happy to be here, first to be with you.
Okay.
And to be where we are, which is in the 8th Ward of New Orleans, about 10 blocks from where I grew up, on Arts and Galvez. And this is my native neighborhood.
There you
so
go.
So it's great to be here.
And I can't remember, I did look up the name of that church that's not far from here.
You told me it was the Annunciation Church, which
okay.
is what I thought, because I, you know, this is really, that's just a few blocks over, and I grew up just a few blocks beyond that.
And this is where they also, a few blocks farther from the church is where they have Annunciation Towers or something named Annunciation something. That's like a senior citizen's
house. I know there is a place. I didn't know the name of that one.
Catholic Archdiocese built it many years ago. So
right.
This is old home week.
It
we're
is.
Still going to talk about La Terre.
Okay. So I started here, and by around 1990, I had been very active in the ecology movement and various movements for social change. And I heard about the opportunity to buy the first 32 acres that I got on a creek in rural Mississippi on Bayou La Terre, which is just a wonderful name because it has our regional name of a bayou.
Sure.
And it has the word La Terre, which is wonderful. And I just want to turn my phone off. If you give me a second just to make sure we don't get interrupted.
You can tell this is live radio. I've already taken one call.
Right, so
we'll get there. Welcome to community
that was
radio.
My warning. So
right.
So I was so happy to find a piece of land on a bayou called La Terre in French, which means the earth. And I had been getting concerned about the condition of the earth and threats to the earth, so it was wonderful to have that name. But La Terre also means the land
sure.
that you stand on,
mm-hmm.
and it also means the place that we have there and have now had for 27 years, roughly. So I went out there and found this wonderful place on a little creek near Dido, Mississippi, not too far from Kiln, Mississippi. And originally, I did not want to own land. So I had the idea that we would form a land co-op and start a community, and that people would move out on the land. And I traveled around visiting land trust communities and seeing how they worked and started making plans for what kind of community might work best.
Those are difficult enterprises.
They are. And the model that I was interested in was a community in which maybe one-third of the land would be individual and two-thirds would be common land. Because there's a problem of these communities becoming kind of suburbanized if it's primarily pseudo-private property. It becomes a little suburbia. So that was something I'm still interested in. It just didn't work out there. There at that particular point in the early 90s, there weren't enough people interested in moving out on the land. So instead, it became more of a site for education, I would say education and celebration.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, was the house on the property when you bought it, or did you have to
do
that?
No, for 25 years, we built a little cabin. My two sons and I carried all the materials across the creek, hiked down to the creek, crossed the creek, carried it up on the other side, built
the
cabin.
Bridge, I mean, I know people are listening to this and saying that we're all crazy, but the bridge, I think, is a recent addition. It's magnificent.
Yeah. We've had a house and a solar installation with a storage building, and we have a big pavilion, and we have a few other things. All of this has happened just in the last few years since I quit teaching at Loyola and decided to work full-time on this project and writing. But over the years, the project evolved. One of the big turning points was 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit.
Sure.
And it was a very transformative event to me. I was in India working with our India program, which I still work with, and came back to in the midst of all the devastation, and worked with a small group, which also was very close to here, in the Upper Ninth Ward, in which a group of people worked full time to help the community live together for a while, work together, and I decided at that point that this was the best way of life. To work full-time doing what human beings and the earth needed most. So at that point I decided I had to leave Loyola after many years of happily teaching and having many wonderful students, but it wasn't full-time work for what I believe in. So at that point Latere Institute became a much more central project in my life.
So we always talk about Katrina being life-changing. For you, it really was,
it was
life-changing.
It was. There were a series of important events. But I
know you were also very active in the local Occupy movement here in New Orleans, I think.
I was active in it. I decided at the 50th General Assembly meeting that I went to that it was time to move on to. I kept track. I was interested in the process, and
sure.
I kind of kept records of it. It was dwindling at that point, and I'd love to talk about Occupy, because it bothers me when people say Occupy was a failure, because things are never just a success or a failure. That people go through a process of formation, and in my opinion, Seattle and Hurricane Katrina and work with Common Ground and Hurricane Sandy and a number of other events in which particularly large numbers of young people came together and did work in communities or engaged in global struggles are a process of development in which a community and a movement evolves. And I think Occupy contributed something extraordinary to that process, that it was not a strategy to win, as if winning would have meant that groups of people
would... Well, and it wasn't an organization. So
it wasn't.
It shouldn't be judged as if it were.
Right.
An event, an uprising, a happening, we could come up with a lot of different terms, and
right.
It made its contribution
right.
as part of this ongoing discussion of change that we have.
And transformation of people and communities, and that's the important thing.
There's no doubt, for good and bad, it moved a lot of people to a better direction. So, Latere does, we're talking to John P. Clark about the Latere Institute for Community and Ecology, which he directs, and it's on a piece of beautiful land, and it's now over 80 acres, but you have a lot of different events that a lot of different people are welcome to use Latere. I know that's part of the mission that you're describing.
Right, that's what we have been doing this for over 20 years, and we're getting more and more active. We have solstice and equinox celebrations with works usually on a Saturday. We have a day of workshops and then a Sunday day of hiking and so forth. We have weekend programs. We're having one coming up this weekend.
Let's tell people about that. It's a good example of what happens here.
Which I think is going to be the best one we've ever had. Well, one of our former students.
Spoken like a true promoter.
Well, right. It's the best event anyone
has ever had. The one coming up
had.
Is always the best. Not the one that you missed.
But not only do I have hope, but I have actual reasons to believe it will be.
Okay.
And this summer, when I was teaching in India, one of our Loyola graduates worked in our program as an assistant. She also worked in the Tulane India program as an assistant, and then she went on to spend, I think, 2.5 months at the eco-feminist philosopher and activist Vandana Shiva's project, which is called Navdanya Biodiversity Farm and Seed Bank. And this is extraordinary that we had a chance, our program was close enough that we got to go there, because I think it was the most important place in India that I could have gone to.
There you go.
Because it's the most important seed bank, and the work that's going on there, I think, is the deepest and most transformational kind of work that's going on globally. So she spent 2.5 months there working with their biodiversity projects and learning from people like Vandana Shiva about what Shiva calls earth democracy and about ecofeminism. Mm-hmm. So she's coming back, and she's going to be our main speaker at this event, and I'm going to do a couple of sessions also, and several other people will be involved. So I think it's going to be really a wonderful program.
Vandana Shiva was also a key member of our FDI watch campaign that Acorn organized in India. So we knew her well, and I think I mentioned she has a little restaurant of sorts, cafe, in her offices that she's also named Seed, the Indian word.
And,
it's a beautiful little thing. I mean, she had us over there for an event a couple of years back. Well, maybe 8 or 10 years back. But,
it's
nothing. So these are good people. It'll be a good event. But I know we had the opportunity to walk along the trail with you, and we came to a spot where you showed us something that Earth First had put together, and they had quite a large meeting on the property. Why don't you give people an insight into that?
Yeah, I think it was a very, very good opportunity for us to sponsor this event. Earth First is called a radical environmental movement. It's been around, I think, since the 80s. And twice a year, they have a national gathering, or continental gathering, I guess it would be. Called a rendezvous. And in the summer, they have their big one at a national park. And in the winter, they have a smaller but still good-sized event. We had, in the end, we had, I think, up to 200 people.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. We had about a four-day gathering. We had about 200 people. Then there was a day of action. And then there was a three-day organizers conference with, I would say, 60 or 70 people. So the whole thing went on for about 8 or 9 days with the preparations, two events, and then the cleanup time. And it was an opportunity to meet extraordinary activists and organizers from around the country.
I should say. But we saw an example of what they billed as for their tree-sitting actions, I think.
Right.
They left that as a memorial.
That's
there
right.
On
that's
the
right.
Terre.
Yeah, they built a platform on a beautiful big old tree overlooking like about 20 feet above the creek. And it's a nice spot for someone to meditate or...
But I think they use
plot,
it in their tree sitting in forests.
They do.
People cutting old growth.
Actually, that's what the purpose was, to build it for training, for right. direct action.
It's quite elaborate.
It is.
A lot of ropes. It looked very sturdy. We didn't have a chance to go up and try to take a sit.
Right. But, we'll come back and sit up there for a while.
That's right.
And
I'm not going to bring my sleeping bag and stay the night, but clearly that's what they do.
Well, I know it's sturdy. They're good at it. They've done it for many years.
Absolutely.
And they were at the Bayou Bridge Oy La Vie camp, and they were doing training there. Some of the same people were doing training at that camp.
And that camp was organized around the pipeline fight, or?
Bayou Bridge Pipeline, indigenous-led movement.
On Wage World, some time ago, during the activities up in the north, we had some people from the great pipeline fight up in, I'm losing it, in North Dakota, was it?
Right.
Yes.
Right. Standing Rock, I guess.
Standing Rock, yeah. Standing Rock Sioux, right. We had somebody, they had terrible cell phone. I asked the guy when he got off, you know, I thanked him. He said, well, I'm glad we made it, because he was actually on a cell phone up a hill in snow flurries, and the temperature was below freezing when I was talking. So it's one of the few times after the end of the show, I almost felt, oh my God, why did I make this guy? But, you know, the Standing Rock thing, and that's, we saw our own small version of that here in Louisiana.
Right, which is still going on. It's getting close to the end, but if people want to get involved, you know, they can go online, look up L'eau est la vie, water is life, or look up Bayou Bridge, and you'll find the resistance movement.
Where is that legally? I know we're off the subject, but somebody filed suit, didn't they? I'm not sure.
There have been several suits, and construction was stopped in St. James Parish. And, you know, there have been temporary stoppages, but in general, it's moved on. What they've done usually is if they're stopped.
Which is the same problem everybody's
had. Yeah, if they're stopped in one place, they just shift their construction,
right,
get as much finished until they win, you know, the other dispute.
And that was the problem in Standing Rock. Then we had a couple of miles to go, really.
Right,
yeah,
right.
But,
I would say if people want to get involved, they have very little time left to do that. And I would encourage people. I think it's something that is worth fighting for, no matter what the slim hope may be that it could be stopped. The more people who get involved, the more chance there is of some success.
And there's always another one coming.
And you learn a lot.
If we're late on this one, we're early on the next. That's one of my philosophies.
In a sense, it's like Occupy. You learn, you meet people, you gain skills, you gain insights. If I could just say one thing about Occupy, as an example, I found the People's Mic to be one of the most inspiring things I ever participated in. Because I know there were many people who had probably never in their lives had the courage to speak in front of 100 people or 200 people. But not only did they do it, everyone there repeated their words. So there was a kind of focus on paying attention to people and giving them recognition. And I think that was a great experience for many people, to actually be heard and gain that recognition. So, you know, there are many things about the movement like that that are really important. Those things stay with people.
I have no doubt that, although as a way to regularly run meetings, speaking as a professional organizer, I think it might drive me crazy if I had to do it, you know.
It's not for every occasion.
No, let's say that. Let's agree there. It's not for every occasion.
Well, just like consensus is not for every occasion. But it's also an extraordinary method of recognizing each person, and then of course you come up with compromise solutions like standing aside and so forth, and a certain number of people have to object in order for the discussion to be ended and so forth. So I mean, you know, democracy is not the smoothest process in the world, but all of these things contribute.
That's right, and I mean, I know. On the Acorn staff for many years in the early 70s, we ran all the staff meetings by consensus. And, you know, those were times when you were young and you'd be willing to stay and have those discussions till 2 or 3 in the morning. Now, you know, as the organization got bigger and bigger, we still believed in consensus, but final responsibility ended up having to resolve some of those issues.
Right.
These are all important experiments. We're talking to John Clark, who is a former professor at Loyola University in New Orleans and is now directing the Laterre Institute in Kiln, Mississippi, a little more than an hour out of New Orleans, and a place that many should put on their list to try to learn from and figure out. John, you're also very well known in many communities as an important philosopher about the impact and value of anarchism. anarchism is having sort of its own day recently. If you look back at 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago when it was more, you know, what happened to the Wild Blaze, something in the 1920 period. But I know around the world.
I'm also a Wobbly, by the way.
As, you know, as I know. I think you showed me your card.
That's right.
There.
That's right. You took a picture of it.
Yeah, exactly. And we shared some stories, very positive stories about our own experience with the Wobblies. But anarchism is a lot more than what a lot of people try to pigeonhole it to be, isn't it?
It is. It has a very big history. It also has other names. A lot of the people who call themselves Antifa or anti-fascists or anti-authoritarians could also call themselves anarchists. And the other word is libertarian, which is a word that has been pretty much stolen in this country from the sort of anarchist kind of, left anarchist kind of people.
Between the far right and Silicon Valley, you
right,
definitely,
right.
You embrace anarchism before you're willing to be a libertarian now on the left.
But libertarian is a very good word, and it was invented in New Orleans. It was invented probably within 10 minutes of this office by a communist anarchist French philosopher named Joseph de Jacques in the 1850s, around 1855. He was living in New Orleans. He wrote his greatest work, which was called L'Humanisphère, the Humanosphere, which was a kind of wild utopian work. He wrote that in the French Quarter. While he was here, he wrote a letter attacking a famous anarchist or mutualist or cooperative socialist thinker named Proudhon, who influenced politics quite a bit in the 19th century. And he's
still quoted widely.
He is. He's a very important figure. But de Jacques attacked Proudhon for two things. He said, first, he was a sexist. He was an advocate of patriarchy. And de Jacques said,
and that wasn't common to attack somebody for that 150
It was not. And the other thing was that Proudhon thought that you could calculate the individual's contribution to the product of one's labor. And he said, you can't do that because it's a social product. We owe it to past generations, to many people all over the world, etc. And he said, because you believe in these two things, patriarchy and this idea of individual labor product, you are not a true libertaire and a libertarian. And this was the first time that
Peter Thiel should have to deal with that argument as well. The guy who made all of his money in PayPal and
Well, you know, these people claim the product of other people's labor. They say they're a libertarian, but de Jacques said, no, you're not a true libertarian.
Except that they'll take tax subsidies and benefit
Government
research.
Of course.
You know, those things, okay, but it's all, we did this.
So I'm very happy that the word was coined, basically, or popularized from someone who was writing basically in another neighborhood around here,
right?
And I think it's a word that should be claimed today, because
anarchism is also a much broader movement.
Well, libertarian is the positive word. Anarchist is the negative word. Libertarian means we are for freedom. We're for freedom in a deep sense, not negative freedom, leave me alone, but freedom in a positive sense. The freedom of each being, each human being and other being, to flourish. You know, we want to have a world, a community, in which we have the conditions for the flourishing of all beings and all communities. And today, that means, you know, ecological communities and the biosphere also. So that's the positive side.
Like populism is having that same problem.
Right. Well, definitely, because populism has a great history.
Absolutely. It's one that we embrace.
It's becoming a pejorative term now.
Yeah, we learned huge amounts from the, you know, the People's Alliance back in the populist era, and now a populist is Donald Trump.
I mean, right.
He would have no idea what it means to stand up for people. But that's what populism is. But
he doesn't want to stand anywhere near people. He wants to be in front of people, haranguing them and moving the masses. But if I could say what the reason why the word is anarchism and not just libertarian is because it comes from the Greek word arche, which means rule, among other things. But it's come to mean in the anarchist tradition a form of domination. And anarchism is the political position that has a critique of all forms of domination. Mm-hmm. So it's not only anti-state, it's not only anti-capitalist, it's anti-patriarchy, against the domination of nature, against technological domination, against racial domination, and we could go on. But there are many forms of domination. One of the problems with revolutionary movements and radical movements is that they've opposed certain forms of domination, but the other forms have come back in full force. So you find, you know, revolutions since the Jacobins in the French Revolution establishing a new form of authoritarianism. So that's the anarchistic element, against all forms of domination. The libertarian dimension is trying to realize the deepest form of freedom as self-realization for all beings.
And in this current issue of Social Policy, the journal that we're involved with, there's a very interesting set of quotations and comments that Professor Clark made in connection to other...
You can say John. You
know. Yeah, well, okay. But I'm trying to help the listeners.
Okay.
If all they hear is John...
Well, there's more than one. All right.
Yeah, yeah. But the way that you are able to link philosophical and practical anarchism with a community is also very important. A lot of people think of anarchism, oh, this is just everyone trying to do their own thing, individualism, you know, on steroids.
Right, right.
Your argument, and I read a book you wrote prompted by the article in Social Policy about how difficult it is to build a community, but how important these same philosophies of anarchism can be to do so.
Right, well, that also came out of Katrina, and in part from being part of a recovery community, a small community of people working for others, you know, for the larger community. And in American political thought, there's been one of the big themes has been the libertarians versus the communitarians. So the libertarians turn out to be these sort of right-wing, so-called free market advocates for individual freedom and so forth. The communitarians are more conservative and traditionalists and so forth. And my thesis is that you can't really be a true communitarian without being a libertarian.
It's a fascinating argument. Yeah. I can't tell you how much I enjoyed it. So some people listening may think, as we're talking to John Clark, the director of Latere, that we're a long way from Latere right now, but we aren't. Right? My argument, and I think John's, would be that Latere is a manifestation of exactly what his own intellectual and scholarship has been. But before we conclude, tell people how they can find out more about Latere, or is there a Facebook or website, how they get a hold of you.
Okay.
Let's tell some people some information they can use.
Okay, well, there are several ways to do it. One is, if you're on Facebook, to talk about that monolith.
That's right.
We have a Facebook page, and actually it's a good source of information because a lot of people post things and we have ongoing information.
And certainly events like the one coming up here is going to be prominent on that Facebook page, I'm sure.
Right. We also have a website, LatereInstitute.org.
Okay.
Which is not updated all the time, but it's a beautiful website and has a lot of information. You know, the Facebook page is updated every day, basically. The website is beautiful. I highly recommend looking at it. If anybody's interested in more information, they could email me, which is Clark, my last name, at loyno.edu, which is the Loyola New Orleans address, clark@loyno.edu. And if anyone would like to get involved, we hope they'll come to our programs. We have a Google group that people can be put on for ongoing updates also.
There you go.
And we also have a communities Google group for people who want to discuss issues of grassroots community. So those are a few of the ways to get in touch with us.
So on that website, that's LatereE.
Right.
And then it was Institute, was it?
Laterre Institute, all one word.
All one word, no breaks, no underscores, .org. So
.org.
LaterreInstitute.org. You know, maybe we'll learn how to spell. And hopefully you'll take a look at Laterre and think about the kind of work that John Clark is doing. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Bethke from Wade's World.